you so much. Welcome back. For those of you that are old enough, you'll recognize that tune. And if you're not old enough, it's not my fault. 610-720-7900. Gene at AskMTM.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. Happy to be serving you this Saturday morning. Glorious day. Just gorgeous. If you like a fall day, I understand it's not fall till Monday. I got that. I have been chastised already.
What?
I'm not sure I used the, is chastised, that's not where you wear those fun, all right, never mind. It is a gloriously gorgeous day out there. A little cool to start. If I understand right, the temperature is supposed to rise rather significantly, and tomorrow is supposed to be in the high 80s. That's impressive. Great day. Enjoy the next 53 and a half minutes by getting your questions asked and answered. Gene at AskMTM.com works very well. 610-720-7900 works very, very well. And morethanmoneyonline.com works very well indeed. Just a couple of housekeeping tips if you're just joining us. Happy anniversary to my bride, Diane. We celebrated our anniversary, wedding anniversary yesterday. And if you see her, you can give her your condolences, congratulations. And our 9/11 event is wrapping up. And as of this morning, we have collected more than $14,000 for the Blue Star Mothers. I want to thank all of you for your generosity and your year after year. That was our 11th year raising funds for various organizations that support our American values. Over the years, the Wounded Warrior Project, the Keystone Warriors, the Blue Star Mothers, and I'm pleased to do that. Just, it's a fair amount of work that, as most of you who are part of our More Than Money family know quite well, Gene doesn't do any real work. He has wonderful people that does all the, they do all the hard work, Connie and Sue and Stephanie particularly, so very valuable to do. Open our doors to lots and lots of folks and have a tremendous event and help out. In 2 weeks, we'll be helping another organization, Folds of Honor, that we're very committed to. We're going to be teeing it up at Southmore and playing some golf and raising some funds, and hopefully we'll see you there as well. So all of that is to bring us to your opportunity to have your questions asked and answered. 610-720-7900, Gene at AskMTM.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. Young lady writes, my mother left me her home in her will almost 3 years ago. According to the internet, it's worth about $185,000. I'm 59, I have a very modest job, and I have no savings. I don't make enough to cover the house taxes and insurance and utilities, so I've been using credit cards. I now owe almost $19,000 on credit cards. How do I get out of this cycle? Goodness. Okay, let's start brainstorming a little bit. She is 59, was modest income. Her mother did a wonderful, wonderful thing and left her home, apparently free and clear. She hasn't mentioned a mortgage, but of course not free and clear, because we all own our homes in conjunction with the government and the real estate taxes. And of course, insurance, you're absolutely right, has to be paid. Utilities, absolutely right. I guess my first piece of advice would be to decide, is this more home than you need? Is it bigger than you need? Because if the insurance and the utilities are really a burden, it may be because you're simply living in too large a space for your needs. And so my first question to you would be to look very carefully at whether the size of the home is the issue. And if the size of the home is the issue, I would recommend that you explore selling the home. Even after paying the credit card balances and realtor expenses, etc., you should still probably end up with around $150,000. And you may find that you can buy a more modest home, whether that's a home or a condominium or an apartment, that kind of thing, that better fits your needs and has much lower expenses. Maybe low enough that your income could be sufficient. Now let's go a different direction. Let's assume that the home fits you quite nicely, and that you would prefer to stay there because it was your mom's home and now it's your home. You're 59. For those of you that have heard us discuss reverse mortgages on air in the past, you will recall that for the HECM mortgages, the home equity conversion mortgage, which is insured by the FHA, you need to be 62. So this young lady is roughly 3 years away. But she could, at age 60, qualify for a private reverse mortgage, and she might want to explore. She's 59. I don't know how close to 60 she is, but she might want to sit with a reverse mortgage expert and explore how a private reverse mortgage might help. In very general terms, if her home is worth 180, she should be able to pull $70,000 or $80,000 out. That would eliminate her credit cards. It would then also still leave her with $50,000 or $60,000 in the bank. That should help supplement her income for the utilities and insurance and real estate taxes for quite some time. Is it going to be enough to sustain her throughout her lifetime? I really don't know. Clearly, staying on the cycle of adding charges to the credit cards, my guess is you're paying minimum payments. My guess is the interest rates are quite large. This is unsustainable. You will end up eventually losing your home and likely your credit as well, your credit rating. So very important that you sit with a financial advisor. Many of you, if you're loyal listeners, have heard me talk about Dave Ramsey and about his organization in the past in terms of debt counseling. And to be fair, I think the Dave Ramsey organization is the best that I have seen in assisting folks who are in a debt crisis. I'm not sure this young lady falls into that category. I'm not sure that that's the type of counsel that she needs in terms of her financial picture. I think she needs to evaluate first her living arrangements and use the equity in her mother's, in the home she inherited from her mother, to its best possible advantage for her. If she can, again, pull $70,000 or $80,000 out, pay off her credit cards, she might very well want to convert some piece of the remaining balance into a kind of a lifetime income stream. An annuity of some form, and that may end up giving her some guaranteed, some peace of mind that she has guaranteed income. My guess is her Social Security will be fairly modest, as her current income is modest, and Social Security is a function of what you've paid in. But sitting with a financial advisor that she trusts first is where I think that she needs to go. 610-720-7900. Gene at askmtm.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. Happy to take your calls, your questions, and your emails this morning. Let me see if this is useful. Ah, very good. Donna emails, can you explain this week's Federal Reserve, she says repro, I think she means repo, activities and the impact or potential impact. Thank you. The Federal Reserve has a very, despite the general distrust on the part of Donald Trump of the Federal Reserve, and to be fair, distrust on the part of lots of folks who are much more deeply invested or deeply connected to the Federal Reserve process than I. The Federal Reserve provides a important function within the banking system. Lots of folks are not aware that banks lend money to each other. They borrow and lend from each other, and very often in very short time frames, overnights, measured in days, 2, 3, 4 days. And lots of the Federal Reserve activity around interest rates is around these borrowing rates. So when folks say, hey, the Federal Reserve raised interest rates 0.25%, some folks panic and they look at their mortgage and think that it's going to go up. It doesn't. There's no direct correlation between the Federal Reserve rate and mortgages or home equity lines. There is an indirect correlation. And if interest rates go up, or in this case down, as they have recently, then other interest rates tend to follow them, particularly on the short end, of the interest rate spectrum, spectrum being 0 to 30 years or so, some a bit longer, so say 40 years or so. So on the shorter end, short-term CDs, 1 to 5 years, for example, a interest rate rise or decline does seem to have an almost immediate and almost direct correlation. On the longer-term events, not so much. This past week, there were some shortfalls. Banks not able to cover some loans that they had made intra-bank, and the Fed stepped in. And in essence, they backed, co-signed to provide collateral for the overnight transactions bank to bank. Does it have a huge impact? For the average American, they have no clue it happened. For the average American, once they had a clue it happened, they have no clue why that's important. And for the average American, it has very little real impact on either today or next month or next year. So the question is it a valuable piece of information longer term? Is it another one of those early signals, for example, of a recession? In my opinion, the answer is no. In my opinion, the answer remains no, despite the protestations of Democratic candidates across. Oh, we lost Bill de Blasio. He fell out of the race. I had such high hopes for him. He's so beloved in his city, home city. So beloved that a recent survey of New York City residents only that would agree to that Bill de Blasio would be a good president, he came in at 0. What? Folks, do you know how hard it is to have a 0 endorsement rate among your constituency? There are folks who will vote, will endorse him based on just not understanding the question. I mean, come on. It's the margin of error is plus or minus 3%. They couldn't even get within the plus or minus 3. So sadly, despite the fact that Bill de Blasio, what a ridiculous human being, is, along with virtually every other progressive Democratic presidential candidate, just beating the drum of recession, recession, recession. There's just no economics to support it. The banks, the financial institutions are stronger now than ever before. People go, well, yeah, I remember in 2008 when so many banks went under. True. And some of the weaker banks are gone. Some of the banks that were doing inappropriate financial transactions are gone. The GDP growth still remains well above the Obama abomination, Obama years, Obamanism. That's still a good phrase. Way to go, Ken. And yet, the drumbeat, recession, recession, recession. It's their to their political advantage. So back to the Federal Reserve. Is it a major issue? I don't think so. I haven't seen anything come from the financial experts and economists that we trust, particularly out of Dr. Siegel's office, that would cause me to change my mind on that. But we'll keep a close eye. 610-720-7900, Gene at AskMTM.com, MoreThanMoneyOnline.com. Happy to be with you on this glorious Saturday morning. Email says, it does not give me a name. Okay, we are scheduled to visit the Holy Lands and the world headquarters of More Than Money next week. Nice. More Than Money world headquarters, indeed, in the Holy Lands between Bethlehem and Nazareth. When we made our appointment, the gentleman gave us a list of items to bring along. One of the things he said was most important was our retirement budget. First of all, we're not really sure how to guesstimate that. And then, does that really affect how we'll invest our retirement savings? Let's start with the last question first. The answer is yes. Next. For those of you who are loyal listeners to More Than Money, you have heard me say many, many times, what you spend in retirement, what your monthly budget is, what your monthly target income is, that will allow you to pay your bills and be happy and healthy, is the most important piece of information that a financial advisor that is focusing on your retirement, excuse me, on your retirement needs to be able to counsel you on how to invest your money. By the way, not just how to invest your money, but how to plan for a legacy for your loved ones, how to plan for your income tax minimization. Let me give you a couple examples. Let's use as a demo that you have $500,000 saved. And you say, I've heard that we can invest reasonably in a balanced approach and spend 4% a year. So that's what I want to do. Okay. 4%, $500,000, $20,000 a year. $1,550 a month. Fantastic. And off you go. If we don't start with how much do you need to spend, we may find ourselves on somewhere along a spectrum between, hey, I just found out that I have a pension and Social Security benefits that pay me $6,000 a month. I'm only spending $5,000 a month, and you're sending me an additional $1,550 a month because that's what we agreed to, and I really don't need it. Well, we shouldn't have agreed to that in the first place. Or, conversely, I need to spend $6,000 a month, My Social Security and pension provide me with $2,000 a month. You are sending me $1,550 a month from my investments because that's what we agreed would be appropriate. That's $3,550, and I need $6,000 a month. This is a horror story. And yet, a lot of particularly money managers, if you listen carefully to the Ken Fisher commercials, they always refer, I think quite accurately, to themselves as money managers. They are investors. They tell you what stocks to buy, what bonds to buy, what mutual funds or ETFs, or they never tell you annuities because he says he will die before he sells an annuity. Well, that's what he has said. He said he over his dead body. But they refer to themselves as money managers. Money managers are what? On a mission. They're on a mission to provide you with a rate of return that you target based on your willingness to accept risk. It has little or no connection to whether you should be accepting that risk at all. So, for example, in our first demo, we don't need the income. Well, then why are you taking the risk? Why are you taking the risk to earn 7 or 8% when you could have a very peaceful investment experience, very conservative, earning 3 or 4% or less? It's a reasonable question. So is it critical? Yes. How do you guesstimate it? There are a lot of misguided rules of thumb. One says the best estimate is 70% of your current income. So if you're making $100,000, you should target $70,000. That's bogus. It's a rule of thumb that never had any real logic attached to it. For example, I make $100,000. I'm currently spending $35,000. So my retirement should be 70. That makes no sense. Do you know anybody in your life that spends more than they make? Oh, heck yeah. Well, I've met a fair number of those. I make 100, I spend 120. Well, in retirement, you're going to target 70%, $70,000. You're going to be really happy. Wow, that seems highly suspect. In retirement, if you have no idea, if you're simply going, I just don't know, a good place to start is 100% of what you're currently spending. So if you're currently spending 120, I don't care that you're only making 100, you're going to probably try to spend 120 in retirement until you go broke. If you're only spending 35, the likelihood that all of a sudden you're magically going to be okay with spending 70 is pretty close to zero. Leopards don't easily change their spots. So if you need a good guesstimate, take a look at what you're currently spending, whether that's looking at your checkbook or your credit cards or combination of all the above, and use 100% of what you're currently spending. Understanding, you'll spend it on different things. It'll be more on grandchildren rather than suits and ties. It'll be more on trips to the Florida Keys before they go completely underwater. Or to the mountains. Yeah, go up to the vineyards. But then they'll be on fire. According to Billy, they're going to be on fire. Oh, Billy, don't be a hero. We've got to take our last break of our show, 610-720-7900, 610-720-7900, Gene at AskMTM.com. We'll take your calls and emails after this on More Than Money. Sadly, that song's not as chipper as the intro might suggests that Billy, don't be a hero. But little Billy down at University of Pennsylvania is trying to be a hero. I'm thinking he's hoping if he says enough stuff about climate change that's really scary, that he gets maybe a shot at AOC. I'm just thinking. Because it fits right into her Green New Deal. You know, if we're down to our last 10 to 12 years, if we don't manage a retreat from our coastlines, it won't matter because much of America will be underwater or on fire. It's a quote from Little Billy. Little Billy Fleming. By the way, he prefers to be called Little Billy because I guess his dad was Big Billy. Or I may have just made that up. He's a professor at University of Pennsylvania. Big Billy, his father, was the professor there when they predicted population explosion and everyone would die of starvation. Now, that was his grandfather, and then it was his father that predicted, University of Pennsylvania professor, that we'd be out of all fuel by the end of the 20th century. And now, little Billy, following in the family's, apparently the family business, okay, predicting dire things. I'm predicting dire things. Actually, I'm predicting dire straits. I think they're going to go on a world tour. Yeah. Exactly. 610-720-7900. Gene@askmtm.com. morethanmoneyonline.com. Put these on. I don't actually need them right at this moment, but we'll do this. Gentleman writes, for many years I worked with a financial advisor here in the Valley at a company that's been around since before my mom and dad started investing in the 1950s. Wow. After mom and dad were gone, I stayed with the same company. Since I've been with this company, I've had four different advisors. I've been okay with that since my investments did fine. Now that I'm closer to retirement, I have more and more questions. My advisor is not a warm and fuzzy kind of person on the phone. I've never met him in person. Our accounts aren't huge, but they aren't small either. He seems annoyed with my questions, but I can't tell if that's true or if that's just the way he is. That's pretty reasonable. Am I being too picky? Should I just be happy with the investment results and not look for answers here? I appreciate your opinion, and thank you for answering my questions. Well, they're very, very, very kind. Warm and fuzzy. I got the fuzzy part down. I got that part down. Are you being too picky? No. Should you expect that your financial advisor is willing to answer questions? Of course. That's why they're called financial advisors. Now, your advisor may or may not fall into that category because if this firm's been around that long, that means it's probably a stock brokerage firm, or at least that's probably how it started. Most of the stock brokerage firms have come into the 21st century. Most of the stock brokers, quote unquote, don't even refer to themselves as stock brokers anymore. They're financial advisors. They may be investment advisors or money managers. But the reality is stock broker is largely a term that's gone by the boards. So most advisors within major, even what you and I would consider stock brokerage companies, have drunk the Kool-Aid. They've become part of the modern professional approach to their clients, and they answer questions quite reasonably. The fact that you've had four different advisors over the years, especially with a company like that, not surprising. The fact that you've stayed with them all those years is, it's very unusual for a client to stay with a company that's kind of continuously trotting out the next person, the next person, the next person. But I'm certain that over time you got kind of used to it. Hey, little Billy is gone. Little Jimmy's your new advisor. Okay. I look at my statement. I had $100. I now have $105. Okay. So what's the big deal? But as you mentioned, now that you're getting close to retirement, you have questions. And if your advisor is kind of prickly about this, snarky, annoyed, You've got two choices. You can either allow your investments to stay there and go find your answers elsewhere and pay for that advice, or you can move your relationship from that firm and from the snarky guy to someone that can both manage your investments and answer all your questions. In my opinion, you are better served doing the latter and having an advisor who can manage your money and answer your questions. Fortunately, that's not a difficult thing at all. There might have been a time decades ago where good investment results were only available from a certain select companies or certain select stockbrokers or investment managers. Simply isn't the case anymore. Quality results from an investment standpoint can be had from many different places, many different types of advisors, both with these major companies that have been around for 100 years and from relatively newer companies, you know, 5 or 10 years old that are independent. Lots of good advice to be had out there. And again, to be fair, the vast majority of today's professional financial advisors are not only able to answer your questions without being prickly, they're very interested. They're very appreciative of the opportunity to kind of extend their service to you and give you even more benefit from working with them by answering your questions about retirement, about the kinds of things that surround retirement. Now, to be fair, are More Than Money advisors, yes, we have an advantage. I get it. We have crafted a company and staffed it with advisors that are not only able to provide you with this information, but build it right into their process of working with our clients. So we already know the kinds of questions that you should be asking, and we have developed a staff to answer those questions, which is why we have a complete in-house income tax planning and preparation department, doing well over 1,000 tax returns a year, helping lots of businesses with taxes, preparation, bookkeeping, et cetera, which is why we have Mark Basak, another perfect example, Social Security expert of the highest order, Medicare expert of the highest order, so that if you haven't yet thought about it, you're going to have questions about Social Security and Medicare. We have that covered. Long-term care issues. What happens if? What happens if? Not a comfortable discussion, perhaps, but one that's necessary. And again, we have Mike Pompei, who is part of our team. He's our partner on this, long-term care issues, and we've helped dozens and dozens and dozens of our clients put together a very, very secure plan. So, snarky, prickly, not warm and fuzzy. I think you're better served exploring a relationship with a financial advisor that's the exact opposite and will give you good investment counsel as well. 610-720-7900, Gene at askmtm.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. Gentleman writes, love the show. Great start. You know, you always get my attention when you start your emails with love the show. You could throw in there, and the host is amazing. But this is good. Thanks for reminding me of some fond memories with that Billy Don't Be a Hero theme song. Haven't heard that in 46 years. Signed, Don. Happy to serve you, sir. See, we're full service here. We're not just giving financial advice. We're bringing back memories. Fantastic. Now, speaking of Mark Basak, speaking of questions that most financial advisors, particularly money managers, investment advisors, would walk away from, Mark Basak is extraordinary. I've been doing this 780 years. I thought I understood Social Security. And of course I do. I've got 780 years of experience. Please. Compared to the experts, I am a babe in the woods. Babe in the woods. Babe in the woods. Because, wow. This is not from Mark. This is an article from a young lady that I read quite often. She's very, very insightful. Mary Beth Franklin, very, very insightful on the Social Security side. And she, in this article, answers a question that would have had me scratching my head to the point of migraines. The question surrounds a couple. He is 68 years old. She is 62. They are planning on marrying. Very nice. Neither of them has currently claimed Social Security. If they get married, it would make the most sense for the new bride to take her Social Security and for her current, now new husband, to take a spousal benefit. So let's use simple numbers. Let's assume that her Social Security at 62 is $2,000. His spousal benefit would be half of that, $1,000. So they're newly married. She claims Social Security. And together, they have $3,000 a month of income. And that allows his Social Security to continue to grow until he is 70. This is all great. This, by the way, is an opportunity that only exists for a very few, relatively few number of people in America, because you have to be born before January 1st of 1954 for it to apply. And so the kind of the last group that turned 66 this year is coming through. And so this is not for everyone, but this is for this particular gentleman. Now, normally, in order to get this benefit, the spousal benefit, you've got to be married at least a year, and that would cut a year off. He's 68 already. He's going to claim it 70. But there are exceptions, and this is where Mary Beth Franklin steps in and says, if there are basically two exceptions. If you're the natural mother or father of a child that you share, the 12-month rule is waived. And the second is if you are already collecting benefits before you marry, you don't need to wait. And in this case, the gentleman was divorced. He is able, as long as he was married to his previous wife 10 years, and as long as they've been divorced at least 2 years, he can claim Social Security benefits on his ex-wife's record, even if she's not claiming Social Security herself. So he could claim those, collect them until the date of their marriage, and then upon his remarriage, those would end. His spousal benefits with his new wife would begin. Wow. Talk about being able to put a bunch of stuff together using the Social Security rules, interpreting the rules. If you go, do not pass go, do not, oh no, do pass go, do collect $200. But if you land, oh, yowza. Fantastic for this couple. God bless them. And if you have questions about Social Security, let me know. We'll get you hooked up with Mark Bazak. 610-720-7900. We go to the phones. We talk to Elaine. Elaine, good morning.
Good morning, Gene. I have a young friend. I'm trying to talk her out of doing something, and I need ammunition is basically why I'm calling. She is a young mother of two children. Now there's a live-in boyfriend in the picture. He is paying half of all the bills and really acting as a father to the children. She would like to let him deduct one of the children on the income tax. One, is it legal? I'm thinking it's a really bad idea. I need some ammunition. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is not an easy question. And
okay,
the reason it's not is because the IRS regulations surrounding the ability to deduct or take the child care deduction, or I'm sorry, the individual deduction for a child, is that they are very complicated and they are very specific. It used to be as long as you provided a reasonable amount of money, you could get a deduction. Now the rules are much more stringent and they need to be documented. Now, before we get negative about the question, finding out whether it works or not is relatively easy, and it may actually make a tremendous amount of sense if, for example, this young lady, if she should have herself modest income, and if the deduction on her tax return really doesn't help her very much, if at all, it may turn out that by sharing the deductions, he may very well be in a higher income tax bracket, and they collectively might save a significant amount of money. But are the children's biological father, is he in the mix here?
Yes and no. Limited visitation. He's in prison.
Ouch.
There is no income coming in, and he'll be in and out of prison probably forever. But
well, that's a shame.
Based on past performance.
Yeah, of course. Well, God bless, and we pray that he turns himself around and that
yes.
he becomes productive and he becomes a valued part of this of raising the children and gives the children a father that they can respect. We pray for all of that. But the circumstances in terms of tax deductions are the biological father will not use them, cannot use them. They're no value to him whatsoever.
Right.
Mom, we need to look carefully at her tax return, and we need to look very carefully at this gentleman's tax return as well, who's important in her life. If she sits with a qualified, either a certified enrolled agent or a CPA, and if they have their tax returns with them and they have the proper information, my guess is that they can decide whether this works or not in about a half an hour.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So if they just go ahead and do this and it turns out they should not have, what are the repercussions for that?
Taxes, penalties, nasty letters from the IRS.
Okay.
It's just, and there's no reason for that because most, and this is a good time of the year. We're now past October 15th, which is kind of the second tax deadline. We're prior to January 1st, where things start to really gear up. So there are a fair number of tax experts out there who would likely meet at pro bono without any real charge to these folks and just walk them through the numbers to find out if it works. And if they're having trouble finding somebody to assist them, send me their information or have them contact our office, and we'll have one of our advisors sit down with them.
Thank you so much, Gene. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Elaine. God bless.
You too. Bye-bye.
610-720-7900. So sweet. She's trying to help a young family and challenging circumstances. And goodness, on the one hand, you go, oh, those kids have some real challenges. And we pray for them. Some folks would shake their heads and go, well, gosh, now father in prison, likely to be in and out of prison for the rest of their lives. They really don't have much of a chance. Bull. Absolutely wrong conclusion to come to. Wrong times 100, times 1,000. Number one, we're going to pray for them. Prayer is pretty impressive stuff, can do amazing things. Number two, they've got friends. Elaine. Good example. Now they have a gentleman in their lives. We pray for him, too, that he's a stand-up guy and that he's there to be a positive influence in their lives. And the stories of Americans who have come from dreadful challenges, difficult circumstances to go on to accomplish tremendous things, that's the American story. So, bless. God bless them all. We don't know names. We don't know children's ages. We don't know any of that stuff. We don't need to. Just keep a prayer. Keep them in your prayers for whatever protection and whatever guidance God can provide. That's what we're looking for. And, boy, how happy would I be if 15 years from now I got a phone call from a young person to say, you don't know me, but 15 years ago, my Aunt Elaine called and you asked folks to pray for me and my life is lovely. That would be cool. 610-720-7900. We go to the phones. We talk to Annie. Annie, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about Social Security disability.
Okay.
About a year ago, my daughter was diagnosed with MS. She works from home, you know, with the computer. Increasingly now, though, you know, it's affecting her thinking. She's getting a little confused, so she's thinking she may have to go on disability sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
She thought she could work a few years, but that may not be the case.
Okay.
So I believe on disability, she would be getting 60% of her salary. Is she allowed, like, say, you know, she's not able to work with something that's very cerebral, you know, would she be allowed to make up or try to make up part of that 40% working maybe some kind of easier job, more physical or more, you know, work in a store or something like that? Or once you're on disability, you can't make any more money?
Yeah, Annie, it really does depend, because when you're referencing 60% of her income, that's a reference to a private disability package versus Social Security disability. The Social Security disability rules, I'm not 100% familiar with. My good friend Mark Basak will be. But if it's a private disability program, you've got to look very, very carefully at the contract and what it provides and what it allows and what it doesn't allow. Some of the older contracts, absolutely. If you can work 1 hour and you make $10, you are disallowed. You get zero. Other more progressive contracts, if you are able to earn something, if, for example, they're providing you with $2,000 a month and you can earn $400, yes, they will decrease your benefit, but they only decrease it by the amount that you're earning. So you'll still get the $2,000, and she gets the benefit of the ability to work and be out and around and the benefits that come from that. So very, very important that you do two things. Number one, that you talk to somebody either at her company in the HR department that understands their disability contract. And then number two, I would recommend Mark Basak in our office that you talk to about the possibilities of what Social Security would provide to her.
Great.
Annie,
thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank
you.
And tell your daughter that she's in our prayers as well.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
God bless. Ah, timing. Couldn't be better. Great phone calls. Thank you so much. Two people just, they're not even concerned about themselves. They're concerned about people they love. Fantastic. We just have a couple minutes left in this edition of More Than Money, so I will say a couple things for you. First of all, happy anniversary to my bride. And when you see her, extend your condolences. Congratulations. And looking forward to the next few weeks. Next week we'll be live at the Relic Hunter firing line. Please stop up there. Great place, great people, really, really smart, really, really nice. Real Americans and people of faith as well. So you're going to meet a lot of great people, including me. So stop on up for next week. And in 2 weeks we'll be playing golf up at Southmore for Folds of Honor. If we can serve you in any way, please just ask. Send me an email, gene@askmtm.com. Go on our website, morethanmoneyonline.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. Or go old school on us and give us a phone call, 610-746-7007. 610-746-7007. If you call this weekend, leave a message. We'll get back to you bright and early Monday morning. And help you in any way that we are able. Enjoy this amazing weather. Enjoy this great weekend. We'll see you next time on More Than Money.